So the title of the session is Peeking at the Source of a Successful Windows Phone App. And of course, I had to pick my own app because I didn't have the source code to any other apps that I can show you. First of all, my name is Jeff Wilcox. In my day job, I'm a senior software development engineer at Microsoft. I work on the Windows Phone team. And mysteriously, Microsoft decided to do something crazy. You know, if I went and I built an iPhone app, the lawyers would come, they'd talk to me, and they'd say, hey, have a nice day, but you probably shouldn't work at Microsoft anymore because you just built an iPhone app. However, of course, we built the Windows Phone, and we have to, like, seed the marketplace. We need apps. And so the lawyers said, for once, we will go ahead. We'll let you guys build your own apps. You own the intellectual property. Rock, have a good time, build games, apps, you know, whatever you want. So in December, I built my own Foursquare app. If you haven't seen Foursquare, pretty much nobody outside the ages of like 20 to 30 that are men use the app. But Foursquare lets you tell your friends if you're at a bar, you know, if you're checking in at tech ed, whatever you're doing. And so I built a pretty cool version of the app. Foursquare is a really cool bunch of guys. They set up this API that I can hit. They're really, really pleased to have me working on it. And so for a long time, mine was basically the Foursquare app. And the reason this is interesting is I have the number one number of ratings for a non-game in the Windows Phone marketplace for a long time as the top-rated app in the store. And part of that is actually the stuff I threw in the app that kind of nags you and talks to you. And so I worked really hard on finding the right kind of balance between performance and usability. So that's some of the stuff that I'm going to hopefully show you, minus the Visual Studio part. But it's been installed 32,000 times. In terms of the Windows Phone Marketplace, I don't actually know all the numbers there, but it's actually one of the higher-ranked apps in terms of the social group. And it's been used for over 8 million page views. I have analytics in the app, and so that's kind of impressive in terms of just how many times it's been used. Over 2 million check-ins have been completed with the app. So it's kind of popular. Of course, it completely pales in comparison to the iPhone, but that's kind of where we are. Windows Phone's just kind of taken off a little bit. Here's kind of what the app looks like. A couple random screens. You can see that there's, you know, information about the place you want to go. There's photos. You can see what's nearby, where the hot places are. And it's all location-based, of course, using the location service. And it's good I have the screenshots because I can't show it to you on the computer. Anyway, in terms of all the stuff that went into it, of course, anyone can build an app. You can go file new project in Visual Studio. And that leads me to the question of how many of you have built like a Windows Phone app? All right, we've got like 12 hands. How many of you would consider yourselves a developer familiar with the Microsoft world or Android or iPhone? All right, so apologies to the rest of you. I may be talking geek speak, but you know, you can continue to check Facebook and everything else. It's fun, you know. And if you don't like Facebook, there's other social services. I'm sure you can use Twitter. Twitter's kind of hot these days. So on. But here's all the stuff I worked on when I kind of wanted to differentiate my app. Some of the big parts is just talking about design. And it's something that, you know, a lot of developers say, hey, I know how to build and design an app. They throw the controls on the page. They ship the app. And then people like me look at it, and I say, wow, Sam, you're 12 pixels off on the left here. Your button styles are wrong. You don't know how to align controls. We should maybe have your eyes checked. And you know, sometimes some developers are like, okay, thanks, Jeff, you're kind of a jerk. But my response is, I'm not a designer, but I can put on, you know, the turtleneck. I can be a designer guy. And when I do that, I get really picky. I say, align things on the left, align it beautifully, let's talk about margins. And so a lot of the app work was actually just fit and finish, iterating over and over, working on design. And the cool thing about the Metro thing when it comes to Windows Phone is that anybody can do it. Developers can kind of drop controls on as long as they don't do the wrong things that Sam was doing. And you drop them on there, and hopefully it'll look fine. Metro's really easy to get going with. When you look at the tools, I started this project in December, and I was hitting Foursquare's version 1 of their API. I was at my parents' kind of over the long holiday break. I coded a ton, and I thought I had a great product until on, I think it was like December 24th, they announced they're deprecating the first version of their API. So they said, hey, make sure to update to version 2 in the next couple months or your app will stop working. So I was really happy that I'd spent that entire vacation coding, but it really taught me a lot about being an app developer. You know, at Microsoft, we often don't look at this. We just kind of say, hey, we're shipping a platform. Here are some APIs you guys can use and have fun building apps. And so the nice thing is that I got pretty pissed off in some ways when I was building this thing. I was like, wow, this API just doesn't make sense. Like, who designed it? Good news is I'm at Microsoft. I found out and I can yell at them. But really, you know, we just don't get a lot of experience in actually building apps. And so kind of this whole thing has been a good experience, just sharing my, you know, my pros and cons of what was a good experience and what just really sucked. So the good news is I'm kind of one of you guys. I'm a developer on the outside, and then in my day job, I try to fix the mistakes. And the most embarrassing thing about this has been that I opened some bugs working on 4th and Mayer, and you know, they kind of siphoned their way into Microsoft, and there were a couple bugs that I ended up fixing so that my app could be better, if that makes any sense. So the worst thing is to open a bug and have it assigned to yourself, and that's happened to me. It's also funny is that sometimes I'll get bug reports, and it's a nice feature that's built in. It's called Tiny Watson, and I wanted to show you this as part of the demo, but Tiny Watson is a way that when there's an unhandled exception, it writes a little file to isolated storage, and then the next time you run the app, it says, hey, looks like there was a crash. Do you want to report it? And so hopefully people say yes, and then it opens up the email task, and then they can send the report direct to me. Well, that's fine, and I get tons and tons of reports this way. The trouble is sometimes it's like, you know, vice presidents at Microsoft and like the PR guys and the president. And you're like, oh, yes, I'm fixing it right away, sir. You know, I'm sorry about the bug crash. And it's kind of weird because in my day job, I don't interact with these people. But apparently when their Foursquare app stops working, they are angry. So it's kind of funny. In terms of things I used, I use Git for my source control. If you're not using source control, you're probably not a developer or you may not be one for much longer. Git was just a really nice way for me to keep track of all my commits. I wish I had a screenshot of it, but I've kind of gone back through and I have every bug fix I've taken, I have every little kind of push and pull that I've done with my servers, and I've done about 300 different check-ins when you look at the source. And so it's been a long ongoing process, and a lot of the things that I ran into just I never thought of the first time, and part of that I just want to share. In terms of what I did for data, I used a framework called AGFX, and it's something that one of the architects at Microsoft built. I'm excited to see if this works. Sorry. So AGFX is a framework that it's a way of saying, hey, I have a piece of data, it's coming off the web, and I want to know how to parse it. And so for Foursquare, you know, I can parse from JSON like what your name is, what a place looks like. But AGFX abstracts the part between the web server and my app. And what that means is that I can cache this data, I can really easily pull it up, and it really saved me hours of coding. And I wish I could show you that, but I can't. So moving right along, the navigation service is something that I would show you in Visual Studio that you can use. If you're not using the navigation service properly, your apps will actually be really difficult to kind of iterate with over time. And so the navigation service, when you look at it, it's kind of like a web address. You say, here's a URL, there's a XAML page, and then some parameters. And a lot of people get lazy, and they start passing around a specific version of their view model state. And the trouble with that, this guy's in for a surprise. The trouble with view model state being passed around is that if the app gets tombstoned or you exit, what you find out is that actually you can't hydrate back to the exact state. You can't. It may not have the same look, the same feel. And so when you move back to using URIs instead, you find that it's really easy to just have a very clean syntax. And so one of the new features for Mango is that you can actually pin things to the start screen. So I've actually pinned on my phone, the very bottom here. My pin's 2222, by the way. So down at the bottom, there's three icons, and these are actually shortcuts into my app. And this is a new feature in Mango that lets me say, like, here's the Sky City Grand Hotel right next to us. I also have TechEd. And so just by touching one of these, my app pops up directly into that place, and then I can just check in or tell my friends I'm here. So it saves about, you know, 8, 9, 10 seconds getting into the app. And the reason this honestly took like maybe half an hour to implement. And the reason it works is because it's just the URI syntax. I'm not passing any other state. I come to the page, it's a fresh instance, and it just works. Now, the cool hack about this is that if you have Mango on your phone, which most developers do, and you grab the marketplace right now, this feature is fully enabled in my app. That was some little hackery. I'm happy to share the code with you guys. I'm surprised the marketplace let it through. But it's really amazing learning the things that you can get through the marketplace team. I didn't tell you that. When you look at the dependencies, of course, the SDK controls. I use Pivot. I don't use the Panorama experience in my app. I think Pivot's better, probably because I wrote it. If there's bugs in Pivot, though, I know who to blame, and I found a couple. So it's frustrating, again, being on both sides of the world there. I use the phone toolkit for things like toggle switch and for the page transitions. I use a library called JSON.net. It's much faster than the Microsoft JSON parsing experience. So I think for Mango, I've been told it's better. But if you're building 7.0 apps, which we all are right now, I'd actually recommend using this other one because it's faster. And again, this is me as Jeff Wilcox, independent developer, and this is not me as the Microsoft guy. But yet it kind of is. Go figure. I also built tons of controls. I used the Bing Maps control. If you guys have been using this, of course, this is kind of what you'd use for every app. It's just I see no reason to rebuild a lot of pieces. Why not just use what I can download? You know, find some nice open source apps. In terms of what my app has, I already mentioned that I have this crash detection. It's called Little Watson, or maybe Tiny Watson. I'm not sure which. But if you Bing or Google for it, one of the guys at Microsoft wrote this. And it's like 30 lines of code. They're bringing in the heavy equipment now. So it's only like 30 lines of code, but you drop it in your app. You never have to think about it again. You just get these crash reports from users. And so I highly recommend, just for any app, going ahead and using it. I've actually found crashes that I never would have seen in Visual Studio with like a debugger. So I will like find just crazy things like out-of-memory conditions. You get a phone call, and somehow like the app just gets crashed. You come back, and you get a stack trace. And this kind of information, I've been fixing just bugs all the time as a result. And since I can't show you VS, but you can do whatever. Okay. So since I can't show you VS, I can show you one of these bug reports. So I set up a Gmail account that I use for all my app stuff. All right, so if you look here, these are what the bug reports look like when they come in. Here's somebody. You see that it has the version of my app that's been running. It's 2.7, which is the latest. It has the message and the exception type. It has the full exception stack trace, which is something that I can fix as a developer. And at the very bottom, I spit all this additional data, like what their culture is. This guy, it looks like, is from Great Britain, or at least he's using that culture. It's an HTC device right now. It's using a decent amount of memory. Is he? This is someone at TechEd right now who enjoys the Great Britain. Is that the culture here? Okay. All right, because we're on the other hemisphere. Someone at TechEd here was trying to navigate out to something else, into the app, and it crashed. And I'm trying to respect their privacy, so it says, may have had a GPS location, but I don't actually replicate their actual latitude and longitude. I'm not evil. I also have information. This guy is running Mango, it looks like, build 7.7.1.2. So all this data together actually gives me a ton of info for how to fix an app. And you just can't find this any other way. So I as a developer, try really hard. Oh, Cupcake Chick here has just had a crash. Unable to check in right now. So, you know, I'm trying to be a good developer typically. Sorry about the crash. I'll try to fix it soon. Jeff. So Cupcake Chick, hopefully, is at least knowing that I'm looking at the bug reports. In this case, seconds after they happen. I'm the most responsive developer ever. But actually, I have like this huge amount of database of just bugs now. So I typically delete a bug once I fixed it. And I can easily query and see how many hundreds of people I've fixed it for. And so if I come in here one day, there's a bug one, I think it was an entire week, Foursquare had some weird JSON coming back, and my app was crashing. And so I had just thousands and thousands of emails. It's part of, I guess, supporting people that use the app so much every day. But the thing is that I obviously couldn't respond to it all, so I set up a little Gmail autoresponder. I'm like, hey, I'm so sorry the app's crashing. I know about it. I appreciate the crash reports. And that way people at least got some immediate feedback. Okay, there's an issue. He's working on it. It's a little bit better than just having these go off into the ether. And again, this is just like 60, 50 lines of code that you just drop in your app. And it's just really been a lifesaver. Other things I've done is I actually detect when you've updated the app. And so every time that you run it, I check what the last known version was that you ran. And that's stored in isolated storage. And then if it's different, I actually know, hey, you just upgraded. Maybe I can pop up a list of what the new features are. And a lot of iPhone apps do this. Not a lot of Windows Phone apps do it, but people seem to really appreciate this. So they upgrade the app. It's like, hey, you're using version 2.7. Here's the new features. I fixed these bugs. Something moved. You can now look at events. And that's really easy to do. You know, you can almost imagine that it's just a simple little if statement in like your app.xaml or in your main page. And then you just, I just have it actually navigate to a page that shows this message. Really simple to set up again. Hardest part is just tracking the old version. And you can do that in isolated storage pretty easily. Hardest thing for me was that I didn't launch the app with this idea. So like for the first 6 versions of my app, I didn't actually know what version you were running. And it would be really stupid if you launched the app the first time. It's like, hey, you've updated. It's like, no, I just ran the app for the first time. And so I actually had to pick a property that I knew would already exist and then kind of migrate the person to the new format. If you try to do upgrading testing in the Windows Phone, it's kind of painful. And I'm sorry about that. We've passed this on to the team. I've complained about it quite a bit because it's really difficult to test an upgrade path inside your apps today. No good answer. I don't have any good tricks. Kind of sucks. But, you know, we're building the platform. It's getting slowly better. Other things I've done, the Marketplace Review Service, it's basically the NAG service. So after you've run my app like 15 times, I pop up a message box and it says, hey, you know, I hope you're enjoying the app. Do you mind, you know, reviewing it? And they can hit yes. I think there's a checkbox saying don't bug me again. And these things are nice. It's actually the reason I think that I've gotten thousands and thousands of reviews. And I have some friends that run a very successful iPhone app. They're much richer than I am, and it's because of their iPhone app. But they actually do this in their app. They get these reviews. It keeps them at the top of lists. And the thing is most people apparently run the app, any app, once or twice, and then they get tired. They're like, okay, it's actually not a good app. It's a piece of junk. Well, if someone's used it 15 times, I might actually have somebody that likes it. They've used it enough that they're saying, okay, I can check in. They come back later. They get up to 15 times. Chances are they're going to give me 5 stars and hopefully not 1 star, because if it's 1 star, they probably stopped using it. It's kind of a nice way to just hopefully kind of juice up your review scores. And hopefully now you can all do that in your own apps because it's a good secret, I think. The more people I tell about, the lower my rankings go. So it's kind of too bad. But I'm telling you the secrets. Other things, navigation-based analytics. There's an analytics framework that's called, I don't know what it's called actually, but it's by a company called Preemptive. And Microsoft gives everyone access to it for free. And I don't use it. Because I am trying to be different, I suppose. And I use an evil service by an evil company called Google. So I use Google Analytics in my app. And it's really nice because I also have been using it just for years in my blog and all these websites. And so now I get these trending numbers for app use. I get trending numbers for my blog use. It's all on the same site. And so that's why I built my own provider for Google. I'm happy to share the source with people if you also are interested. But whenever you navigate to a new page, it just sends off a little, you know, a little event to Google, and it says, okay, you went from the main page to a place page, or you went to a profile page. And it's anonymous. It doesn't send location. It doesn't send information about who you're looking up or anything. But what it lets me do is it lets me kind of look over time at exactly how many things, you know, where are people looking. And something like 0.01% of people, they look and see the about page, which as a developer, I wish they'd all go and see it because they'd be like, oh, Jeff built this. He's a cool guy. You know, look, I can see all the stuff he used. But, you know, the truth is nobody went to see it. Like, maybe like, you know, Sam over here or somebody that I know, just to kind of, you know, make me feel a little better. He went to that about page and I got an analytics event for it. But what it lets me do is I can see the top 2 or 3 things that, you know, people are hitting and I can focus on those pages. If I have 60 XAML pages in my app, you know, why waste the time, you know, fine-tuning pixels on the one that, you know, 3 people see? Might as well devote all my effort to the first couple. And without analytics, I wouldn't know that. I'm very nice to people. If you, in my app, I actually ask you to opt in for anonymous data. And if you don't check that box, I don't grab analytics data. And I'm probably like one of the only developers in the world that does that. And it's mostly because I don't have a revenue model. And so I'm not making money anyway. So I might as well respect your privacy. My app's also fully set up to do push notifications, although I don't have this feature turned on right now. I can't show you the code because this whole thing. Inside the app, I modified and built my own kind of frame experience. I use a transition frame from the toolkit. This gives the nice like transitions in and out automatically. And it's kind of bit me in the wherever because I've actually prototyped new fixes to the transitions. In the first couple, like I think 5 or 6 releases of the app, if you touch something on the screen, it would kind of sit there. It would kind of sit there for maybe half a second. It would do some thinking, and then it would transition. And as an app user, like it looked really bad. Like you'd touch, nothing would happen, it would transition. And there's actually some bugs where you could touch a button twice, and then the app would crash. And so I actually prototyped some fixes for the toolkit of kind of a better way to do transitions, having them immediately be responsive. And as a result, in the new toolkit, I've checked in this beautiful set of fixes. But in the process, I caused my users pain because there were crashes and bugs in that. And so it's been an interesting way for me to kind of test new features on my users. If you're using the app today, you are an excellent guinea pig. So thank you. I've actually made some big mistakes. All developers do. One of them is complying with the marketplace requirements. Okay, there's some laughs here. So who's had an app rejected by the marketplace? All right, there's enough of you. Who has gotten an app through without having any failures? One? Two. All right, I'll buy you guys a beer at the party later. It's a really frustrating experience to submit an app. You know, there's all these really fine-tuned requirements. You know, must start in 5 seconds, and after 10 seconds, must be responsive to user touch. And you just don't always think about all the kind of variables and conditions. If you have a web request, it might crash the app if you don't catch it properly. And there's a situation where the app was working great. I submitted an update, and the marketplace team changed the requirements on me. And they were like, hey, if you're showing progress, I had a little screen that says loading, dot, dot, dot. And after like 3 seconds, they said, you have to show the message. If they don't have a network connection, you have to let them know that. Well, in my app, I was just happily handling the exception, and then it would say loading, dot, dot, dot. And so you could sit the phone there for like 5 minutes, it would say loading. You know, okay, marketplace, they were right to fail me. I was the idiot developer for not handling it. But I was actually looking at the way I architected my app, and it sucked because I couldn't easily fix this. I actually had to sit down like an entire weekend and re-architect all my views. It took probably 16, 17 hours to do. And I wish I was a smarter guy to have done it at the start, but it was a really interesting kind of learning experience that, you know, until I got that issue fixed, I couldn't service my users, I couldn't update the app. And so that was kind of a startling discovery for me that if you're not really good with clean code from the start, you can run into these tough situations. Some of the things I didn't have were a kill bit. So the week that Foursquare changed their web service stuff, my app was handling it in a way that I was following their guidelines, but in the process, I was crashing my own app. And so I'd pop up a page, I'd send off a web request, it would actually pop a new page and then crash. And I had thousands of users getting this and nothing I could do. I couldn't submit an update to the marketplace, I didn't want to pull the app from the marketplace, and I had no way to tell my users, hey, the app's broken. And so I think in the future, I want to add a kill bit, you know, maybe once a day or some kind of algorithm. I want to say, go to my main server up in the cloud. Let's see if there's an issue. If there's a big issue, just display a message that I could hopefully customize and just don't let the app continue. And if I would have had that, I would have had much higher ratings today. A lot of people got really, really upset when this issue happened, and so they gave me really bad reviews for that week or so. And so my learning experience is add a kill bit to your app. These are all kind of framework-y things. You know, nothing's unique to my Foursquare app. This could happen to anybody. And part of me wants to kind of open source all this stuff so anyone can just add it to an app. And maybe we'll get there someday, but we're not there yet. I don't have time. I have apparently 2 day jobs here, which is tough. Another thing is the update check. And so I've got users who are like using 6 old versions of my app. I'm at 2.7, and I'm still getting crash reports from 2.2 and 2.1. And the problem is that a lot of people don't actually know when there's updates to their apps. And so it seems like almost like the kill bit. I need to have a service that says, what's the current version that people should be enjoying? They should be on 2.7, and if they're not, you should just let them know, hey, there's an update, please update your phone. And the only way that you can really have an update work well is if someone pins the marketplace to their start screen, they'll see numbers of how many apps to be updated, but it's a little different than iPhone where you always see a number. And so in the Windows Phone, it's kind of hidden. If people don't check this, they just don't get updates. And so I think it's important on Windows Phone to consider a way to tell your users when you do have an update. It'd be nice if Microsoft did this, but today they don't. Those other things, not too important. The call up there about numbers and URIs, I was actually upsetting people around the world. Many of my fine European friends were yelling at me the map was not appearing on pages. And it's because I was parsing doubles using the invariant culture, but then also displaying them in a different way and then reparsing them. And, you know, it's, I'm an American. I think as American. Decimals, you know, it's a number, dot, whatever. And I just wasn't thinking, and I didn't have a way of testing this easily. I should have taken the time to kind of change my region in the emulator, kind of walk around and see what works and what doesn't. But I was just parsing numbers the wrong way. It's an easy mistake to make, and it's really hard to find these. You almost need to use either the FXCOP globalization rules or just kind of do a complete search of everywhere you're parsing numbers and kind of do it the right way. And that bit me. I thought I'd fixed them all like three or four times. I'd still get reports from people saying, hey, it sucks, can't see this screen, it crashes on this page. And so it was kind of a good experience in me and trying to be a better developer on trying to fix that. Maybe you guys always do it right. I don't know. Here's a ton of components I built. And what this tells me is that my day job at Microsoft, we haven't done the right job of providing all the controls you need. When you build a new Windows Phone app, there's a lot of pieces that just aren't there that you need to do some magic ninja coding or get some third-party components. And so this is a learning experience. I built a ton of controls that I hope to share. I've kind of slowly been blogging and open sourcing these guys. But it's also been kind of fun because it's my own project. I don't have a boss here. So I have a type called Awesome Image and Awesome Scroll Viewer, and they're awesome. And I can name them that way because it's my app. Just to tell you what they do, you can see this in a lot of iPhone apps, is that if you have a big list of images or like a big list of people, if you scroll down the list, you'll see little blocks where the people's images should be, but it's not until it stops scrolling that it loads in that single page of images. And so that's what this component does, is it just loads images on the current screen, and it's a really big perf win for scrolling plus just general performance. And if you have a list of, say, 300 people, and you are paying a lot of money for your data connection, it's kind of nice because this way you're not loading 300 images, you're loading just the screen in front of you. And so I think as you look at markets where data is more expensive, that's really important. I hope to share that someday. Yeah, here apparently data is very expensive. It cost me like $30 to get like 20 megs in my hotel. And thankfully, my cell phone's amazingly cheaper. Anyway, if I could show you the big sexy Visual Studio, I would show you that stuff. How many of you have dealt with tombstoning issues? How many of you tombstone your code properly? Yeah, okay, so nobody tombstones. Tombstoning is, of course, if you hit the start button in a Windows Phone app, it goes back, and the idea is that you should store exactly what state was there. Did they scroll down a list? What are they currently viewing? And the trouble is that you have to do this by hand. We kind of left it to developers instead of Microsoft implementing it at the framework level, and it's kind of frustrating. There's no easy solution. I have a kind of cool solution that you can do in XAML that automatically tombstones properties for you without writing code, but I can't show it to you. So I will blog it to you sometime soon. 12 is the golden metro number. This is, again, many people have alignment issues. If you just drop a text block in your app, but you don't set the style on it, by default the margin's zero, which means it's kind of like at the exact far end of the page. And the idea is you're supposed to actually set a style that brings it in 12 pixels. And the styles are called phone text normal style, maybe. Am I right, Sam? Phone text style. Yeah, I think it ends in style. They're impossible to remember, and the tools don't help you. But if you use these styles, it'll automatically format things so that they align. You'll see that buttons are aligned with text, and it looks much more like the phone. And if things ever look off, just add and subtract 12 pixels until they look right. It's kind of the magic number. If you see people hard coding crazy numbers like odd numbers, like 13, they're probably doing something wrong, or maybe they need to, get their eyes checked out. Again, we're not designers, but with the beauty of having, 0, 12, 24, developers can do that. We know how to add numbers. We like even numbers and just kind of make it look good using those magic numbers. I hate talking so much. Usually I have like the F5 parts, and then the app crashes, and then you're like, oh, it's just a Microsoft demo, and then people kind of laugh, and it breaks up the boring guy talking. Can't do that today. I'm sorry. You've already seen this. This is my my Gmail inbox for my app, and so there's not much to tell you about this except I get lots of crash reports. It's a lot to manage. I don't think when I wrote the app I ever understood the multiplier. If you get yourself 30,000 users, and 25,000 of them use the app every day, multiple times, you find lots of crazy bugs. And so I try really hard to fix them, but again, these just continue to roll in. The code gets better. Yes? Yes, the price on my app. This is an interesting thing. The history, how many of you have used the app? Okay, so a couple people. When this app first came out, I was working hard. I was going to polish it pretty nicely, and I was thinking of charging $1.99. And then the official Foursquare app that Foursquare and Microsoft worked on, it stopped working. And I think there was a bug in the app. Something changed in their API. And so as a Foursquare user, I liked the service for whatever reason. And I said, well, gosh, I've got a fully built app. It's mostly ready to go. I'm going to make people like at least have something they can use. So I said, I'm going to make it free, not even a trial. I'll just push it out. And then afterwards, I realized, wow, I could have made a lot of money there. Like, I could be, at least $60,000 minus 30% richer. And I think of that and the new cars I could buy, and I think it's a little sad. But the benefit is, by being a free app, I have a lot more users. I've learned a lot in the process. I get all these crash reports that are making me a better developer. It's been a good experience. And if people yell at me, like, hey, Jeff, shouldn't you be at Microsoft right now working on your feature? I'm like, yeah, I'm in my own time right now. I'm moonlighting, but I'm not making money off of it, so I'm not too concerned. It's kind of a weird situation, I guess. I do wish I had sold a couple. I do have a little donate button on the website. If you go to 4thandmayor.com, I've gotten, I think, like 150-some bucks on there. So I'm making it big. It almost pays for my LLC registration I used for the app. So, yeah, the lawyers in America love their money. Yeah, this... I have a different service, actually, that was based in some EC2 up in Amazon that aggregated stack traces. And I actually found I couldn't figure a lot out from them. It's actually nice because this way I can actually respond to somebody, especially if it's right away. And I can be like, hey, I noticed this crashed. Like, what were you doing? And they're like, oh, well, I just hit the button right away. I'm like, okay, that makes sense. I can probably fix that. As opposed to if it's an anonymous report through the service, I just had a stack trace, no data. I guess it could go either way. I'm pretty low tech here. The tools, I'm all by myself, no staff. If you're a real corporation, I'm sure you have excellent ways of handling this kind of stuff. Yeah, we'll see. We have to sell some more Windows phones first. Speaking of trying to get clients, here are some of the ways that I promoted my app. A lot of people have been stealing my website design. I had one guy last week actually ask. He's like, hey, I've stolen your website design. I've stole the CSS. Is that okay? It's like, yeah, okay. Yeah, enjoy. I found that my users are the first guys that really help people find out about my app. People like it. They're like, hey, you should check this out because the official app sucks. They're like, okay, cool. Your friends find out about it. I built a website, dirt cheap. It's just hosted up in Amazon. And I built it in just a couple hours. And the important part is it gives people a website address to go to. And with Zune, most people don't have Zune if they don't have a Windows phone, or even if they do, they may not look at it. By having a website, you can send friends to it. They can see screenshots. Might as well pull it up since it's more exciting than the PowerPoint. So 4thandmayor.com. Yes, it's the ultimate Foursquare app for your Windows phone, folks. There's a big button here to download it. I have screenshots that kind of slide in. If you use a browser like Chrome, you get really nice slides. If you use IE, you don't get those. don't ask me. And again, I don't think people actually go to these subpages, but I also have a blog hosted. I think this is up with what all the cool kids use for blogging these days. Tumblr. This is just a Tumblr domain that's redirected. And so here I kind of update people whenever I release a new up. That here it's out and it fixes the issues. It's just a place for people to send people. They can Bing it. They can Twitter these addresses. Tweet, Twitter, whatever. This wasn't me. Yes. Don't worry about it, guys. So you can actually download, minus the icon on the left, but the rest of it, you can actually download that from the create.msdn site. And they have like 30 different colors.
Anything. So that's not changing with Mango, or is that just going to stay?
They don't tell me anything. I'm sure the Mango does have all this new like marketing stuff with these red squares, so maybe they'll update that. For right now, it's what we have. Other stuff, I did set up a Twitter account. It's been mixed. I don't check it very often, and so people will report issues to me, and sometimes it'll be a week before I respond. I feel kind of bad about that, but it's also nice because if I do release an update, I can then retweet the Twitter account, and people see it. Bless you. There's also a Facebook page I set up, and no one really goes to it. I get my weekly reports, and maybe 200 people see it. But the important thing is people that use the app, they hit the like button, either on the site or on Facebook, and then their friends find out about it. So I think that's important to have, but I don't get a lot of hits on it. The media, if you have like a Windows Phone update, as a developer, you can send some of the guys like at Windows Phone Central, wpcentral.com, you can send them zaps, and they'll actually check them out, review them before you release. And then as soon as you release it, they have this big article posted all about your update. And so I found they're really responsive. You know, you just send them some code, and they love it. They like keeping the community up to date. And that's a really nice way for people to find out about it. The Windows Phone Marketplace, of course, I've been featured on there a couple times. I swear, as a Microsoft guy, you probably get featured less. They definitely, like, there's no special string pulling involved. They look for apps that look good, they look like the phone, or they use phone features. And somebody magically up there in some room, they decide, you know, today's the day that Jeff's app will be featured. They hit a button, it gets featured, and then I get a couple thousand downloads that day. The thing is, there's no way to, like, you can't pay for the service, you can't request it, it just kind of happens. And I have no idea, you know, if you've been featured, yes?
Is there a way to find out if you had a thing?
No! I've had people, like, all over the world, because I guess each marketplace is different. And so people, like, on Twitter, they're like, hey, Jeff, your app's featured. I'm like, oh, cool, I wish the marketplace team would have let me know. No way to know. I guess, hopefully, maybe someone will write a service for that someday, or, you know, scrape it and let you know. Friends, I guess, are the best way to figure that out. The marketplace team?
Yeah.
I have no idea. Like from a Microsoft organizational standpoint, there's the engineering side, huge team working on that, that's where I work. And then there's the services team, and they're also massive. And what they do, I don't know. I hope they fix the bugs, because I see lots of bugs. But you know, that's what happens with any release. I bet you even if I knew the number, they wouldn't let me tell you. So, sorry. What's next? I would have already hopefully demoed all the awesome features, but the good news is we only have a couple of minutes left. I've been kind of prototyping a lot of cool features in the app, and I'll be blogging it soon, but I build my source for both Mango and 7.0. It's all the same source. I've done some inversion of control there, some kind of real-time dependency injection, and it's really sweet because I don't have to worry about if I fix a bug, how do I integrate it around and how do I work with those fixes. I'm adding some Foursquare features. I'm localizing into 6 languages. That's been kind of an interesting experience. And adding all these cool Mango features, which I can't show you today. Thanks for coming to a very unique talk. Do you have any questions for me? We have 3 whole minutes left, and then you can go and find a talk that has a presentation. Yes? They disappeared because your phone restarted. Yes. So if you have a secondary tile and it has a remote URI for the image as opposed to something in your app, when you reboot, it actually pulls it down because it won't re-request the same one. That's apparently how the feature is designed. I don't know if it's a bug or not, but it's there. The idea being you have to repin it. And there's a bug in my app right now because of the way that I hacked this stuff together, where if you repin it, it doesn't pin again. So I'll fix that in 2.8. Yeah. But yeah, sorry about that. Yes? No. Yeah, I wondered that at first, too, but no. I think the marketplace guys, I think they're just ready for Mango to go out, that hopefully it'll be a little short-term period before everyone has it.
Approximately how much time do you spend on your out-of-Microsoft time?
Way too much time. You can talk to my friends, family, girlfriend. They're like, yeah, he's busy coding. I know when I built the app, it was really one weekend I did it. I can look back at my source code check-ins, and I did the whole thing in probably 20 hours initially, but I probably spent 150, I'm guessing, hours. Like, I've spent tons of time updating it, revving it, fixing bugs. Spent way too much time, I think, for not making money. But in terms of, like, weekly, I actually spend maybe 30 or 40 minutes a week actually coding. Usually it's just one little feature I push out. That's why recently I pushed kind of an update every week. It's just, oh, I'm going to fix these three bugs and then ship it. So that's been easy and not too involved. But then the maintenance of the Twitter account and reporting to users, that's probably easily 20 minutes a day right now. And I try to do it if I take the bus or, you know, just coffee break, taking care of that. But, yeah. I'm a developer. I hate advertising. That's the honest answer. I can do the math on, you know, millions of page views and try to figure out the CPM, eCPM that that's worth. I could probably be making, you know, 500 to 2 grand a month maybe from what I've heard from that, but I don't want to see ads in my own app. That's where I am right now. And I guess if, you know, Microsoft, it's a good employer, I have a good income, so I'm happy to subsidize Foursquare for all my friends. That's the answer of my business model right now. But if I was building a second app, I might try to add ads or add a trial mode, definitely. I think I'd have to have a unique new product ID for that. I believe so. I think I could check the trial one now, but when you like go from a free app to a paid app, I think there's a lot of weird things that happen there. And plus, I wouldn't get money from all my current users, which are the most loyal ones that probably would love to pay me. So that's a problem. But yeah.
Yeah.
I have apps I haven't published. I had an app that let you look in and see as a Microsoft developer your internal bugs. And this is an IT conference, so people can decide why I didn't publish that one from a security standpoint. But as a developer, I wanted that app out. I haven't had time for anything else, and I think I know better now than publishing way too many apps. So, yeah. Thanks for coming. If you have specific questions, come and bother me. Sorry for the demo stuff, but hey.